Today's edition of the Daily Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is full spectrum CBD? Full spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than full spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, full spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's ancientlifeoil.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Caller podcast for the 23rd day of April, 2020. It's a Thursday, in case you're keeping score at home, but then why would you bother keeping score at home, right? What's the point? I'm not saying we're lost and desperate. I'm just saying we're desperate and lost. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to the program. Thank you for clicking, downloading, sharing, rating, and reviewing, doing all that good stuff. I appreciate the heck out of it. It goes without saying, even though I say it often, there'd be no point in doing this if you guys weren't listening. So thank you for that. And you're our only advertising that we got. Spread the word. Except I guess at the Daily Caller website, they have my ugly mug up there. My bearded face. I've shaved the beard for now. I'll grow it back. But anyway, that's a long story. Got a lot of stuff to get to, a bunch of things to talk about. There will be no guest today. You have been warned. Those of you who have emailed and said, we need to get back to you ranting. Oh, you'll get your rant today, baby. You'll get your rant today. I thought about, you know, trying to get a guest. And then I thought, I don't want to try to get a guest. I just want to rant. It's been a while. And so there is much to rant about. And rant I shall. If you want to email me, it's Derek@dailycaller.com. So keep those coming in. I feel bad. I feel awful. It's been a long time since I've given, like, signed books away or anything, but it's been longer since I've had anybody that I could sit in a studio with and get a book signed by. So there you go. Let's start, shall we? Because there is a lot to get to, and where should we go? I want to start off with this discussion of the hydroxychloroquine study. The media is sexually aroused at this. It is something to behold, something disgusting to behold, to be honest with you. The way that they have really come out against the prospect, the possibility of hydroxychloroquine actually saving lives, right? It is, they don't want it to. It's bizarre. I've never seen a group of people actively root against something bad or something bad being stopped. I don't know how they live with themselves, but they do it under the guise of journalism. You know, that's how they try and pass it off. Why? We are only interested in truth telling and fact finding and things of that nature, not politics at all. Well, that's all they really care about, actually, is the fact that the President of the United States has suggested, rooted for, hoped that something good would happen. He had hoped that hydroxychloroquine would be a treatment for coronavirus. And there's still hope. There's a lot of evidence. South Korea has been using this. France has been using this. Other countries around the world have been using this. Why in the hell wouldn't we try to use this? Well, the media has ignored the fact that those other countries have used it because, well, it doesn't suit their needs. It doesn't suit their political purposes. As soon as Donald Trump came out in favor of it, they were, I ain't for it, I'm against it. Well, why? Well, don't you see that Donald Trump is for it? Yeah, but shouldn't you be rooting for it at least? Shouldn't you be hopeful? Shouldn't you be, I don't know, fingers crossed, pray a little bit, something that maybe we have a treatment that is effective for people? No, nope, Donald Trump is for it. It's bad. They don't think about it in terms of human lives. They think of it in terms of November the 3rd, because that's all they think about things. The individual, I say it all the time, and I'm going to say it again here. The individual is disposable, irrelevant to the left. They're actually an obstruction. Individuals, collective, maybe they care about it. They'll care about things about race. They'll care about gender, gender identity, sexual orientation. But individually, they don't care beyond the extent to which an individual can be exploited to advance whatever it is they happen to be trying to advance at any given moment. It's a neuroses. It's a psychosis. It's gross. It's just gross, would be the way to put it. So when it comes to hydroxychloroquine, they have ignored everything favorable that has been available for them to report and everything favorable that has been studied about it. But when something negative comes along, holy Frank to Nana, Katie bar the door, they rush out to get it, as was the case yesterday with a quote, I'm using quotes, but I'm doing a podcast and one of my hands is holding a microphone, so it's only one quote, quote study that suggests that people were dying who were taking hydroxychloroquine. Listen to the way that the Politico couches this. Their headline, more deaths, no benefit from malaria drug in VA virus study. You think, whoa, more deaths, what's going on? A malaria drug widely touted by President Donald Trump for treating the new coronavirus showed no benefit in a large analysis of its use in U.S. veterans hospitals. There were more deaths among those given hydroxychloroquine versus standard care, researchers reported. The nationwide study was not a rigorous experiment. No, wait, they just kind of throw that casually away. Now, remember the scrutiny that the study in France got. This is not a scientific study. Every time they were forced to report on it, mostly to attack President Trump, they said, well, it wasn't a scientific study. The website, the journal that published it, is now regretting publishing it because it hadn't gone through the rigors of peer review. And they touted that as the study was major parts of the study were being pulled back. That's not true. It's just that they hadn't been fully peer-reviewed. Because, I don't know if you're aware of this, but when thousands of people are dying every day, time is kind of the essence. You don't have time to dick around and go, well, I might have something, but I'm going to need 6 to 8 months. If your doctor said, you've got 2 weeks to live, and he said, wait a second, doc, is there anything you can do about it? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe come back in like a month or so. I'm working on something, but come back in a month or so. And you said, wait a second. You just told me I had 2 weeks to live. What the hell do you mean come back in a month? Hey, what are you going to do? We've got to figure this stuff out. I don't want you suing me or anything. Well, we'll figure it out. Don't sweat it. You're not going to accept that. Nobody should accept that. But when it came to something in the middle of a pandemic, and the French said, hey, wait a second. We got something that's showing some promise. There were a collective group of leftists in this country, and by that I mean all of them, who were saying, well, shit, I hope this doesn't work. I hope this doesn't work because Donald Trump said something nice about it. We want to pin every death on him. And if he was ahead of the curve on something that helps save lives, we're screwed. It will do damage to what we hope feverishly, what we wake up in the morning moist over. Yeah, I know that word grosses out a lot of people, but you get the point. This is how the left works. So when you get this study from the Veterans Administration that says they're dying, it's killing our veterans, they got to stop taking this drug, everybody. Yeah, that, of course, is widely reported. There wasn't a major news outlet in the country, liberal, that gleefully reported more deaths, more deaths, more deaths. The only problem is this study was not an actual study. you see. It was an observation. There's a lot of data missing, including and perhaps most importantly, as articulated by the Secretary of the Veterans Administration in this clip I'm about to tell you, the mere fact that the people who were given this drug, who, well, the some of them, it's not very many people. It's, what, 368 people across the country. 368 people across the country. The majority of whom, those who died, were in the, let's say, the home stretch of life. Don't take my word for it. The Secretary of the Veterans Administration appeared on MSNBC yesterday, and was asked about this by the incredibly incompetent Stephanie Ruhle. She throws it in sort of as an aside here, and the VA secretary reports what, because his own organization, the VA, put this on their website because they want doctors to have, there is no clinical trial done yet. Nobody is saying, give them this pill and pat him on the head and say, well, just take two of these and good luck, you're cured. Nobody's saying that. It is an arrow at a point when doctors around the world are looking for arrows, okay? Their quivers, they're firing everything they got in their quiver, and they're hoping something works. Some things are showing more promise than others. Hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine, in conjunction with either zithromycin or zinc, are showing some promise, particularly as we've always been told, in people who are not about to die, right? Not about to, not the 95-year-old, although it does seem to work, at least anecdotally, since that's all we have, and that's all this study is itself, anecdotally, in people who are near death. It's not, it has worked in some people like that. Those people, much like Lazarus, was hunted down and killed because, well, he couldn't be allowed to keep going. It made for inconvenient questions for some people. The people who have taken hydroxychloroquine and recovered, they make for an inconvenient existence for the media. So they're largely ignored, unless, of course, they come out like Rita Wilson, who is Tom Hanks's wife, who said, yeah, I was really, really sick. I took hydroxychloroquine and I got better, but I don't know if it was because of that or because it was just my time to get better. It's it just coincided with my getting better because she's a Democrat in good standing. Anyway, I've strayed. Let's get back to the Secretary of Veterans Affairs talking on MSNBC yesterday.
I do want to ask you quickly before we go. Washington Post has a new report, a study about the anti-malarial drug hydroxychloroquine. Sure. President Trump has touted this, but it is linked to higher rates of death in the VA, coronavirus related. Can you elaborate what's going on with this drug?
Sure. That's an observational study. It's not a clinical study. It was done on a small number of veterans. Sadly, those of whom were in the last stages of life, and the drug was given to them. And I have to also say that the drug, we know the drug has been working on middle age and younger veterans. And the governor of New York was just in the Oval Office yesterday asking for more of the drug to be delivered to the city of New York.
So there you have it. The Secretary of the Veterans Administration saying, no, it was people in the last stage of their life. It was observational. We don't actually know what caused the death of these people. It could have been that they were old, that they had coronavirus, and maybe we waited too long to give it to them. But it is working on younger and middle-aged people. The Politico, back to that, says this is the scare tactic. They're actively trying to discourage people, not only from taking it if they have coronavirus, but they've got to be scaring the living crap out of people who take it for rheumatoid arthritis every day and the people who take it for lupus disease every day. Remember, this has been around for 70, 80 years, since 1935, I think. So it's been around a while. It helps people, or it would not have lasted that long. But the Politico reports researchers did not track side effects, but noted hints, hints. Now, how many studies do you find, medical studies, where they're like, well, we must alter everything we're doing because there's hints of something? But noted hints that hydroxychloroquine might, hints that might, again, two qualifiers in a sentence is a lot of qualifiers in a sentence. It would not pass muster if it came to a medical peer-reviewed journal. But this hasn't been peer-reviewed, which is, again, the same problem that the media reported, outraged, screamed from the mountaintops about the French study. He said, researchers did not track side effects, but noted hints that hydroxychloroquine might have damaged other organs. The drug has long been known to have potentially serious side effects, including altering the heartbeat in a way that could lead to sudden death. So I bet everybody out there taking it for rheumatoid arthritis, people who have been taking it for years so they can function in society, are now, you know, bricking in their pants going, oh my God, am I going to just drop dead right now? Should I stop taking this pill? I had no idea my doctor was trying to kill me. Well, your doctor wasn't trying to kill you. It's just that Orange Man said something about it, and therefore everything has to be destroyed. There is no dimmer switch on the left. It is a toggle switch. It's on or it's off. It's outrage or indifference. Outrage or indifference. And every time Donald Trump is associated with anything, it's outrage. Unless it's something good, then it's indifference, and they don't bother to report on it. So the hype that you've been seeing against hydroxychloroquine and the flush look of sexual arousal you might have noticed on liberal cable news channels comes from a might, maybe, hint, could be, small, tiny study of people that were elderly and frankly, not long for this world either way. No pill is ever a cure for anything. That's why, you know, you sit there and you say, well, this is some people have died. 20% of the people given this drug died. It didn't work. What's going on? How is that possible? Well, 20%, 10%, 5%, sometimes 50% of people die who have an illness, a disease, and there is a treatment for it. Why? Because, again, that pesky word, individuals, that the left hates. Individuals have individual DNA. Certain things work differently with some people. Now, there can be discovered common traits in them, but, you know, anything. Aspirin could kill you if you're allergic to aspirin. Should we ban aspirin? Should any doctor who ever tells anybody, don't, you know what, go home and take an aspirin, should they then be arrested for murder or attempted murder or possible attempted murder because somebody could be allergic to aspirin? Penicillin has saved how many lives since it was discovered? But some people are allergic to penicillin. Should we ban penicillin? Well, you know, don't give any patient penicillin. A study found that some people got it and died. There's also medication that simply just doesn't work for certain people. For whatever reason, doesn't kill them, doesn't have harmful side effects, except for the fact that it doesn't work the way that the doctors and the patients had hoped. Should we ban all of it because it doesn't work for everybody? Science, medical science, here's a little thing that when there become breakthroughs, big breakthroughs in this, you can expect the left to have an absolute conniption fit. There are medical studies on drugs and various treatments for all sorts of ailments that are getting down to the DNA level, right? And there are differences, minor, insignificant in the grand scheme of things, but differences nonetheless in the DNA of people of various races. That would mean that some treatments will work better. Nothing has ever worked for everybody, by the way, in any group either, not just all human beings, but any race of people, any gender of people. Nothing is 100%. But if they discover that there are differences in DNA and certain treatments work better in different people and different races, and oh my God, they're going to absolutely have an absolute fit. They're going to go crazy. They're going to go absolutely, more racism will be cried that week than racism will ever be cried in any week. Why? Because that's their default position. But it's sickening to watch these people sit there and actively cheer, downplay people who have taken hydroxychloroquine and seen an almost immediate, within of like 12 hours, change in their condition. Now, maybe, just maybe, it was that someone like Rita Wilson, a high fever for 9 days, takes a pill, and a few hours later, her fever breaks and she starts to feel better. It could be a wild coincidence. It absolutely could be. That's why it needs to be studied. But the infinitesimal number of people who have actual adverse reactions to taking hydroxychloroquine is no reason to tell everybody they shouldn't take it. Again, this drug has been around since the mid-1930s. If it was a crapshoot 50-50 coin toss, you'd either deal with your lupus or your rheumatoid arthritis, or you could die. Let's give it a shot. How many people would walk out of their doctor's office going, well, yeah, my joints really ache, so I'm willing to toss a coin and take this pill every day that may just randomly kill me? No, the percentage of adverse reactions to that has to be infinitesimal. Not nothing, but not 10%. There is such a thing as acceptable risk in everything, in absolutely everything in life. Like I said, penicillin will kill you if you're allergic to it, but penicillin will save your life if you're not allergic to it. The odds of the percentage of people who are allergic to penicillin is pretty low. So you're probably safe in taking penicillin. We'll just call it 97% safe. But if there's a 100% chance you're going to die without taking that 3% risk, wouldn't you take it? With hydroxychloroquine, there's probably a, depending on how bad you are, there's probably a 10 to 20% chance that you're going to die, depending on your pre-existing conditions, your age, and everything else, and how bad you got it. If there was a 2% chance, a 1% chance that this pill could have an adverse effect on you, a negative impact, would you say, well, the hell with it? I'm not going to take it. That's a risk too big. I'd much rather grapple with the 20% chance of death than the 1% chance that my heartbeat will be altered that could lead to sudden death in a way that apparently can't be monitored in a hospital. Oh, wait, yes, it can be monitored in a hospital. There's risk in everything. Educated risk-taking is how we function as a society and as individuals. That's just common sense. I ain't making it up. Every time you leave the house, you could get run over by a bus. You could get shot. A satellite could fall out of orbit and crash on you. All of these things and everything in between could happen to you. But you could go out and get groceries. You could go out and see a movie. You could go out and hang out with friends. Not now, but you get the general idea. You weigh those odds. If there was a 37.5% chance that a satellite was going to land on you if you left your house, you'd probably think twice about leaving your house. That's a commonsensical risk assessment. Is the risk worth the reward? I really want to go to this party, but I really don't want to be smashed by a satellite that crashes down on my head, so I think I'm going to pass. Or, this party's going to be too good. I'm willing to risk it. I'll drive there in a zigzaggy pattern so the satellite won't know how to get me. You do that in everything you do in life. Why should treating coronavirus be any different? It shouldn't. Except that if it works for people, well, Orange Man Bad could come out looking better than the people who are poo-pooing the concept want him to look. So they tout things like an observational study. It's not even an observational. It's not even a study. The word study should not be associated with it, but it's being reported as a study as if, wow, this is amazing. No. All the problems they said they had with the study out of France that actually was published in a journal exist, and then some, in this so-called study. they just don't focus on it. They're not interested in that. The standard changed based upon their needs, their political needs at the moment. It's a sickness. It's a delusion. It's a fraud. It's progressive. Just drives me nuts. All right, before we get to our next story, let me tell you about ancientlifeoil.com. I'm looking at it. I still haven't thrown away my empty bottle of chocolate mint CBD oil sitting next to my cinnamon CBD oil. But ancientlifeoil.com has all the CBD oil you could ever need, want, or desire, and they have it at a great price. CBD oil, what does CBD oil do? Well, what doesn't CBD oil do? I take it for eye strain at the end of the day. Helps me get to sleep faster. It helps with some joint aches that I have. It really is an amazing compound. I feel bad for people who lived before us who didn't get to see the miracle of CBD oil. But don't take my word for it. Search on the interweb CBD oil benefits. See what people are saying. And you think, that's crazy. This stuff that they're claiming couldn't possibly be so. Then talk to some friends. Lord knows we got the time now. And see what they're saying. I bet you'll find somebody who has in your life who's taking CBD oil. See what they have to say. And then when you're convinced, because you will be convinced, you go to ancientlifeoil.com for 100% organic CBD oil. The best stuff you can buy. You can get the fly-by-night garbage anywhere. Ancientlifeoil.com. They're having a huge sale right now. Big percentages off. And then you enter my name, Derek, at checkout in the coupon code. Click apply. You get free fast shipping on top of it. Ancientlifeoil.com. All one word. You will thank me for it. Now, before we move off of these scumbags in the media, I just want to, because I come across these montages every once in a while. They're great. It's Media Research Center does really great ones. Washington Free Beacon does really great ones. And Grabian Media does really great ones. This one I want to play is from the Media Research Center. And it is a gaggle of left-wing journalists. Of course, they would never call themselves left-wing journalists. They're straight journalists. I don't know how their journalism identifies, but they are not straight when it comes to journalism. And they're all blaming President Trump for having blood on his hands, for deaths, for being responsible for deaths. He's might as well be killing people himself, shooting people on Fifth Avenue, like he said. This is a horrible monster and he needs to be stopped. These are the very same people who tell you that a drug that might help, you shouldn't take. A drug that has shown promise, that has helped other people. It's an antiviral drug in one way or another. It helps in the fight against malaria, hydroxychloroquine, that you shouldn't take it. That it's a death sentence to take that drug. Don't do it. Die. Die for your country instead of trying to live for your country. It's a patriotic thing to do. I bet you every one of them, if they got sick, would take gobble this up in a heartbeat. I suspect that Chris Cuomo gobbled up some chloroquine when he was sick. He'd never admit to it, of course. That would be the fast track to getting shit canned at CNN. But I suspect it's true. Anyway, this montage is, you'll recognize a lot of the voices of people just blaming Donald Trump for death.
In electing Donald J. Trump as president, the American people did the most reckless thing they have ever done in our history.
This is what happens when you elect a sociopath as president.
All his worst qualities, his mendaciousness, his constant telling of lies,
his delays, his incompetence, his ignorance, has turned deadly.
Dangerous.
Dangerous.
Dangerous?
Dangerous.
This will be something that's paid in human lives, and that's an enormous tragedy.
Do you think President Trump is responsible for the deaths of Americans?
What is President Trump's level of culpability?
Do you think there is blood on the president's hands, considering the slow response?
He became the chaos president, but what the American people want right now, and they're not getting, is a coronavirus president, and a chaos president just isn't fitting the bill.
This isn't reality TV anymore. People are dying, and this guy is acting a fool.
Is there anything or anyone that can tell him to pump the brakes or at least pretend to care about the loss of life?
People are still going to die because of Donald Trump's incompetence and lack of leadership.
There is death after death after death that is on the president's watch.
More people are dead and dying in America tonight
because Donald Trump is president.
How much more? How many people have to die?
My God, can you imagine being a gutter snipe like Don Lemon? How he manages to live with himself, I'll never know. Maybe the millions of dollars for not having any discernible skills helps him. Who the hell can tell? But it is, it's disgusting. He is they're all disgusting, every single one of them. And they're all, the worst part about it is they're just self-righteous pricks. They really are. They're just so holier than thou. I am right, and people who don't agree with me are wrong. And they don't even hold out the prospect that maybe somebody knows more than they do. Maybe somebody is more correct than they are. No, they think that being on TV gives them superpowers of clairvoyance. That, of course, is not the case, as evidenced daily on this program, as to how so many of them are complete morons who couldn't, they wear slip-on shoes because they couldn't tie a knot. It's beyond them. But with Donald Trump having all this blood on his hands because he didn't do enough, there were all those Democrats who did. Actually, once Donald Trump started coming out in late January and throughout February talking about coronavirus, he talked about it during the State of the Union address. He issued the travel ban at the end of January, so on and so forth. There were Democrats actively, many of whom voices you just heard, saying overreaction, xenophobia, racism, blah, 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 blah. How much blood is splattered all over CNN? By the way, the head of CNN said yesterday that the offices, he apparently told staff in an email, the offices of CNN probably won't reopen again until September. So you're going to have to keep working from home. Like, I don't blame them for not wanting to be around Brian Stelter, but September seems a little excessive. But who knows? Considering how many people at CNN have come out with it, maybe they're all banging. This would be the way to sort of fend off preemptively a whole bunch of sexual harassment cases. Who, I mean, somebody's a super spreader there, if I'm allowed to say that in this context. But what was interesting is yesterday we discovered that it seems as though the coronavirus has been in the United States longer than we have been led to believe. Longer than the liberal media has led us to believe, because they don't really fact check anything. Remember the other day when Kim Jong-un was teetering near death? What happened to that big CNN and MSNBC scoop? Where did that go? Kim Jong-un still near death? Was that ever true? We don't know. Well, this story from Time magazine. Health officials say two people died of the coronavirus in California weeks before the first reported death from the disease. What? Santa Clara County officials said Tuesday the people died at home on February 6th and February 17th. Before this, the first U.S. death from the virus had been reported on February 29th. Well, that's quite a significant difference. One whole month. Granted, it's February, but it's still one whole month earlier than thought. That means that the virus, as San Francisco Chronicle reported, that the virus can take roughly about a month to kill you. So they said that it meant that the person who died on February the 6th, the older woman, was likely infected at the beginning of January. Now, then you go back. Governor Newsom has since ordered autopsies be performed and tests be performed on a whole bunch of people who died. I've told you about the LA Times story about the man. It's a particularly brutal flu season. Remember that story from a couple of weeks ago? Maybe it wasn't a particularly brutal flu season. Maybe the coronavirus has been in this country since December, since maybe November, considering how piss poor a job China did in containing it or even trying to contain it, plus all the lying. We only have the whistleblowers or attempted whistleblowers stories about how and when this thing came about, which puts it in November. That doesn't mean that it wasn't out before then. It's just this is what we've been able to glean from the information. Maybe other people knew about it and didn't say anything, didn't blow any whistles because they were good little communists. But it is interesting that when you look at the numbers compared, when you compare New York to California, the numbers of deaths about 10 times more in New York than in California. California has twice the population of New York. There is just as much, if not more, traffic travel was between China and New York, or China and New York, and China and California. California is much, much closer. The birth tourism, for example, is a big, big trade out there in California. Chinese people come over here and give birth to their babies and then go back home with a newborn American citizen, for example. But there is no rational reason, if what we've been told about coronavirus is true and accurate, that California should not be decimated. Decimated. Now, California is sending ventilators to other states. California never really even came close to being stressed from a hospital bed perspective, let alone overrun. New York came close to being overrun. They weren't overrun. They weren't that close. They're now sending ventilators away as well. Most of the state, most of the problems in New York are in New York City. Now, maybe there are many reasons that could be, but the most obvious one would likely be that people live on top of each other in New York City, not only literally in tall buildings and not in, you know, houses with yards, but also the subway system. If you've ever ridden the New York subway, aside from the lovely aroma of fresh urine on tile, you are overwhelmed with body odor. Now, most people don't project body odor away from them like an exploding star, although some people do. But it's because you smell it because they're close enough to you in a subway car, a very confined space with a lot of people. I read the other day how New York City, to save on money, had cut down on some train cars, the numbers of train cars. Well, that just means more people in smaller spaces. That could be why New York had such a massive outbreak relative to California, where everybody drives. Nobody wants to, I think there's a subway system in LA and buses, but nobody uses them, or very few people use them. Nobody wants to use them. People like their cars. Nobody walks in LA. But then it doesn't really explain Detroit, where I grew up. Because there's public transportation to the extent that there are city buses, and they run fairly regularly. I used to have to take them. My car would break down pretty regularly, and to get to college, I'd have to take the bus down Michigan Avenue and then transfer to Woodward Avenue and take the bus. It sucked. People smelled. You're mostly standing up the whole time. It's hot in the summer and humid, and people are stinky, and it's freezing in the winter, and still people are stinky. I don't know how they do it, but they do it. So there is less public transportation. There's no subway. There's something called a people mover, which is a damn joke. It goes around in a circle downtown in one direction. So if you need to go like two stops back, you got to go 10 stops around. It's ridiculous. It's a huge, huge failure. But it doesn't really explain the severity of the outbreak in Detroit. It does. Like, Chicago makes sense because there's public transportation. The L is awesome in Chicago. You can get just about anywhere on the elevated train. Plus, it's really cool looking in movies. But Detroit, we don't know. It could be that people in Detroit lead a less than healthy lifestyle or whatever. There is a lot of obesity in the Detroit area. It's not a matter of people getting it. People are getting it everywhere. It's the death rate. The death rate in New York, the number of deaths, the percentage of deaths is like 40% of the deaths in the country have occurred in New York. That doesn't make a lot of sense. So there's a possibility. Actually, we know now that coronavirus was in the United States at least a month earlier than we thought, and early January. causing the first death on February 6th, there's the possibility for the herd immunity that people have speculated about having occurred. The world didn't really know what was going on. There were rumors, there were murmurs, there was, oh, there's something new going on in China sort of stories. But this was back when the World Health Organization was still telling us, well, it's no human to human, nothing to worry about. Don't worry about it. Chinese communists got this under control. Well, it apparently was here. And if one person died of it, how many people had it and didn't know it? How many other people died of it and it was just chalked up to the flu? You can develop herd immunity without even an awareness that the herd is being made immune to anything. So it'll be really interesting to see the results from the autopsies that they're going to go back and retroactively sort of do. It also kind of tells you it's kind of messed up that so many people die without really a whole lot of inquiry into why they died. But with corona, one way to do this would be to look at, and I don't know, I wouldn't even know where to begin, but look up the number of deaths from influenza this summer from, or this winter from California. See if A, if they're out of the ordinary, and B, the average ages of people. Maybe, I suspect a lot of them were actually coronavirus, because if you go in, I got the flu, they treat you for the flu, and you don't make it, you die in a hospital, they don't necessarily do an autopsy, they rarely do an autopsy on you if they think they know what you're there for and it doesn't work out for you. Retroactively, we'll find out, but it is, it's very interesting. The story continues to evolve. And then you think back of all the declarative statements that these so-called journalists have engaged in. And you think, wow, you didn't even do the basics of reporting. You weren't even curious. You couldn't even be bothered to look at this stuff, could you? Up on Capitol Hill, hold on to your wallets, ladies and gentlemen. The Senate and the House, the Democrats and the Republicans have come to an agreement on a new aid. And what's scariest is they're calling this coronavirus 3.5. They're not even considering this the fourth sort of bailout bill. They're looking at this as the baby bill. It is like $484 billion. Republicans, remember, this was supposed to be like one page long. It was supposed to be just replenishing the PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program. And Democrats said, no, we're not going to allow that to happen. We can't possibly allow that to happen. We need a bigger bill. So then they got like $75 billion for hospitals, which again, nothing against hospitals, but if there's a need for money for hospitals, why not do it as a standalone bill? There's another $25 billion for testing. Testing. Nancy Pelosi and test. Yes, we need testing, but we put billions of dollars in the first bill to get testing. What happened to that? Where are those tests? Is it maybe that, you know, just because you got a pile of money that you've just created out of air sitting there doesn't mean that something is immediately manufactured, that it takes a little time to ramp up the amount of tests you're claiming to want? And that's kind of telling. See, the reason you add in all this other crap, the reason you take a two-page bill that was pretty straightforward, $250 billion into the Paycheck Protection Program, the loans for small businesses, the reason you do that and take that to a monstrosity that is about double what the initial amount of funds requested were was, is because you can hide things in it. The reason you don't do a standalone bill to fund hospitals is if you want to tuck in some nice little provisions for your donors, for your pals, for your friends, for your supporters, you can do that. If you want to tuck in $25 million for the Kennedy Center, for example, you can't do that in a one-page bill. You can do that in a 1,000-page bill. You can, and it will be discovered right after you pass it, but who cares? The story will be that you passed it, and you can harp on about that, and your media allies will play along with you. It is a dance. realistically, each one of these things Democrats held this up for could and should have been done individually. Very simple. And here's a crazy idea. Congress should get off their ass and get back to work. If they're going to spend $1 billion here, $1 trillion there, $500 billion one day, and then $2 trillion, how about they get off their asses and come to Washington, D.C. and actually debate this? How about they hold hearings? How about, you know, what's the words I'm looking for? Oh, yeah, do your damn job. No, they don't want to do that. Nancy Pelosi is elderly. She's in her 80s. She appeared on Morning Joe yesterday. She looks like she's in a constant state of surprise. She really does. She looks as though her eyebrows are like they have a bet to see which eyebrow can be the first one to plant a flag on the top of her head. And right now, I think the left eyebrow is winning. They are really super high. I've never seen a bigger gap between somebody's top eyelid and the bottom of their eyebrow. They could be driving movie screens, each eye. There's so much. I don't know what they're doing, Botoxing, pulling back, tightening, or whatever. Normally, things sort of go around the side, and the ears make a race to the back of the head. Nancy Pelosi's taking a different path. Her forehead's getting bigger. It's getting smoother with age, which is unnatural. And her eyebrows look like she's horrified and scared every time she sees. She looks like she just caught a glimpse of her naked body stepping out of the shower and just horrified about what happened to her, the ravages of age. But she was on Morning Joe. Now, remember, Mitch McConnell, a week ago, when this program was running out of money, not before it ran out of money, when it was running out of money, Mitch McConnell submitted that two-page bill. It might have been one page worth of text, but the way that they write legislation is pretty screwed up. It's a very short bill. That was it. $250 billion to replenish the Paycheck Protection Program. Nancy Pelosi said, no, no, we must get other things in there that we want. Not having enough confidence or being able to make a case for what she wanted, she was going to hold up a program that was keeping people employed. Also, again, the no ability to hide stuff in it aspect, which we'll find out, you know, in a couple of days, I imagine, what kind of goodies they stuffed in there for their donors and their friends. So the Democrats delayed this. The Washington Post the other day reported about the Paycheck Protection Program that Democrats had requested to replenish the funds. Democrats blocked those funds from being replenished, but the Washington Post reported it as though it was Democrats who wanted to replenish this, not those evil Republicans who only care about large corporations, which largely fund the Democratic Party. So Nancy, taking that cue from that, went on Morning Joe and talked about, I mean, the balls on this woman. They're as big as her forehead. They're as big as the gap between her eyes and her eyebrows. She went on to blame Mitch McConnell, the guy who introduced the very short, very specific piece of legislation that Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer blocked. She went on to blame Mitch McConnell for the delay in the passing of the bill.
Yes, we were very pleased that the Senate finally accepted the fact that we needed more money for testing for hospitals, for smaller businesses to participate in the Paycheck Protection Program. That took them a couple of weeks, but they finally did. We're in a tradition of having this be the fourth bill that we were passing in a bipartisan spirit, three in the month of March. The first one, March 4th, passed in the House, was about testing, testing, testing. A month and a half later, we still aren't where we need to be. Hopefully, with the bill that passed the Senate yesterday and will pass the House tomorrow, there will be the recognition that if we want to open the country, if we want to open our economy, the key to that is testing, 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 contact tracing, as well as, again, I'm thinking you want to call it isolation, separation, or the rest. But it, again, as Mitch McConnell likes to say, we delayed the bill. No, he delayed the bill. Two weeks ago, he came to the floor and said, this is all we're doing, just the 250. And the Democrats were united, House and Senate. The Senate Democrats went to the floor and said, no, no to that. We have a better idea about hospitals and testing and more funds for all of the businesses, the lower, shall we say, the unbankable small businesses. So we were very pleased that he finally came around to the fact that we had to go forward with this. So he was the one wasting time. I say that because I keep hearing him say, we delayed. No, he delayed. But here we are, and we're ready to go on to the next bill to help our heroes, our healthcare workers, our firefighters, our first responders, EMS, our folks who are doing all the wonderful work to save lives as they risk their lives, and now they may lose their jobs.
First of all, what an incoherent babbling moron. She has no ability to speak whatsoever. Dentures falling out, or her brain is falling out, or perhaps the Botox seeping in, or things being pulled too tightly, causing a minor concussion every time she goes and has the screws tightened and whatever's holding her face up. But everything she's saying right there is a lie. You heard Mika's phone go off because she's a moron who's new to television, apparently, after, what has she been on there, 30 years? She doesn't put her phone on silent. The hell's she have her phone sitting on her desk for? But Joe and Mika just sat there and didn't say a word. They gave her 2 minutes and 17 seconds to lie unchallenged on MSNBC. There's nothing. Oh, Mitch McConnell wanted this. We said, no, we need this and we need that and we needed more money for testing. Then you heard Nancy Pelosi. Right now, I'm a layman, right? I'm just a guy sitting at home. Nancy Pelosi says the first bill was all about testing. Testing, testing, testing. And what, 3 weeks later, we need more money for testing? We need another $25 billion for testing? I thought you solved the testing issue there, Nancy. You sure as hell congratulated yourself on it. Nothing she says is based in reality, let alone truth, yet she knows that she's saying it on MSNBC, and who the hell's going to call her out? Joe? Please. Mika? She's probably sitting there going, breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out, in the hope that she doesn't forget to do it, because she thinks she'll pass out, and maybe she will pass out. I don't know. But this is insanity. It is a lie. We've got to help our hospitals. Our hospitals, the hospitals that need help in this country are the hospitals that are being forced to shut down because they don't have patients. And Democrat governors and some Republican governors have canceled all elective surgeries in the country. Those are the hospitals that need help. Those are the hospitals that are shutting down. Those are the hospitals that are going, shit, I'm supposed to do a bypass surgery, but I can't because that's deemed non-essential. I was supposed to do a hip replacement, but I can't. We can't get patients. It's all deemed non-essential. Meanwhile, they're not overrun with coronavirus cases. They aren't even close to being overrun with coronavirus cases. And the state governments still say, no, we couldn't possibly reopen for that. Really? Okay, I guess. People, how many people are dying because important procedures that were deemed elective by elected officials have been canceled because they were expecting, thanks to really crappy models, to be overrun with coronavirus cases that didn't come to pass? And still the government's going, well, no, 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 no. We couldn't possibly do that. Governor Kemp down in Georgia, he is planning on starting the reopening process, or at least freeing people in Georgia to go back to work if they want. Some business, if you own a hair salon, you own a nail salon, you own a tattoo parlor, you own a bowling alley, you own a movie theater, if you want to, starting Friday, you can reopen. Now, who's going to go? Who knows? The people who want to go will go. But the media and the left, but I repeat myself, are going absolutely insane over that prospect. They're going to kill people down in Georgia. All the models say that Georgia won't even hit its peak in cases until the middle of next month. Why are they going back now? And I bet you the president will be asked about it 1,000 times. The governor has been asked about it 1,000 times. They've had the mayor of Atlanta on TV going, "This is a disaster. I can't believe we're doing this." No one's forced to go and open their hair salon if they don't want to. Nobody's forced to go bowling if they don't want to. I suspect there's going to be some people who will want to. I suspect there'll be a lot more people who won't want to. But I know that doing nothing but sitting there twiddling your thumbs as your business goes under, as your family goes under, is not as appealing as, you know, working with a mask and gloves on and washing your hands and keeping away from people. I think that having some revenue is better than having no revenue. I'm old-fashioned that way. But they're absolutely horrified at the prospect that people would return back to their lives. Now, do I have time to play this? Yeah, I barely have time to play this. I want to play this this clip of Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York, liberal hero, at a press conference yesterday, said basically, if you want to work, shut up and stay home. If you want to work, if you're worried about, he's not worried at all about the people who will die because of the economic downturn. He basically, when asked about the people who will commit suicide because of the economic ruin they will face, he says, well, that's a choice. Like, go ahead and kill yourself if you want to kill yourself. I just want to make sure that I'm protecting me and my family and everybody else. So he doesn't give a damn about people who kill themselves. And then he says, if you want to work now, go out and get a job that's an essential job, as determined by him. Everything, everybody thinks their job is essential because they need it to live. But if you go out and get a job that he deems it's essential, then you can work. Otherwise, shut up, stay at home, and if you don't like it, you can kill yourself. This is a kind of a long clip, but it's worth hearing because this is the Democratic Party's mindset, and the guy who I bet a lot of Democratic voters, and I know everybody over at MSNBC, would love to replace Joe Biden with.
I don't know if you can hear, but there are protesters outside right now honking their horns and raising signs. We did speak to a few of them before we came in, and these are regular people who are not getting a paycheck. Some of them are not getting their unemployment check, and they're saying that they don't have time to wait for all of this testing, and they need to get back to work in order to feed their families. Their savings is running out. They don't have another week. They're not getting answers. So their point is the cure can't be worse than the illness itself. Yeah. What is your response to them?
The illness is death. What is worse than death?
Well, what if somebody commits suicide because they can't pay their bills?
Yeah, but the illness is maybe my death as opposed to your death. You said, they said, the cure is worse than the illness. The illness is death. How can the cure be worse than the illness if the illness is potential death?
But what if the economy failing
worse than death
is equals death?
Very few,
because of mental illness, the people stuck at home.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't equal death. Economic hardship, yes, very bad, not death. Emotional stress from being locked in a house, very bad, not death. Domestic violence on the increase, very bad, not death. And not death of someone else. See, that's what we have to factor into this equation. Yeah, it's your life, do whatever you want. But you're now responsible for my life. You have a responsibility to me. It's not just about you. You have a responsibility to me, right? We started here saying it's not about me, it's about we. get your head around the we concept. So it's not all about you. It's about me too. It's about we. Also, I get the economic hardship. Everybody gets it. Everybody feels it. Federal government is sending out a check for individuals, $600, an additional $1,200. We are moving heaven and earth to get the unemployment payments going. So we get the economic anxiety. The question is, how do you respond to it? And do you respond to it in a way that jeopardizes public health and possibly causes more people to die? And think about it as if it was your family that might get infected, right? And that's what we're talking about. And when you think about it as your family, you have a different perspective. I'll tell you the truth. It's not an abstract argument where they say, he says, she says, he says, she says. I know that's how it works. Well, the protesters say this, governor says this, protesters say this, governor says this. Okay, think about it as your family might be in the mix. Because when I see 484 New Yorkers die, I feel that it's like people in my family. And nothing comes before the public health risk of somebody else's life. And that's where we are.
But they're also saying, if you can't afford to pay me unemployment, or you, or your system
you
is
will
not
be
set
paid.
Up,
you will be paid
but
unemployment
they can't
from
wait
the day.
For the they can't wait for the money. They're out of money.
Yeah, we're talking about a couple of days lag on the unemployment insurance, and they will get the check from the date of unemployment. It does not cost them an extra penny. Now, they can say, unemployment insurance isn't enough. I get it. Even with the $600 check and the $1,200 check and the unemployment insurance benefit is not enough. I understand the economic hardship. We all feel it. The question is, what do you do about it? And do you put public health at risk? And do you drive up the number of deaths for it? Because you have no idea how to reopen now.
So they're saying that, is there a fundamental right to work if the government can't get me the money when I need it? Is there
yeah, you
a fundamental
want to go, by the way,
right
you want to go
to
work? Go take a job as an essential worker. Do it tomorrow.
Do it tomorrow. Or kill yourself. I don't give a shit, either one. You imagine? This is the guy that is lionized by the liberal media. Oh, my God, he's displaying such leadership, such heroic leadership. My God, I love me some Chris Cuomo. I bet that Mika cries out Andrew Cuomo's name when she's in bed with Joe, because who in the hell would cry out Joe's name? Neither of his other two wives did, I'm sure. But this is absurd. Well, I don't care. You can go ahead and kill yourself. Look at you. Shut up. Quit whining. If you got it so bad, kill yourself. You can. You're only hurting yourself if you kill yourself. But if you go outside and you try to work, if you go outside to mow your lawn, if you go outside, unless you're his brother who has to go to the Hamptons to check out, you know, the mansion he's building. Otherwise, stay home, shut up. Unless you're a member of the media, which is essential. Everybody should just, in New York, here's a trick. I'll leave you with a trick. I wish I had more time, but I just don't. The file will get too big for me to upload because there's a lot to dissect in there. But it's absurd, and I think most of it is self-evident. But here's a trick. If you want to go out and move about your state, move about your country, do a crazy thing like leave your house, you could start a website, start a blog. Declare yourself a journalist and then apply for an exemption, right? Journalists get exemptions from the stay-at-home orders because they are essential personnel. Start yourself a little company, go to a website, legal thing, file an LLC, whatever, and then declare yourself a journalistic entity and yourself to be a journalist. Then get yourself an exemption. Then you can go about doing whatever the hell you want to do. You can be a member of the liberal elite. It's just that easy. Otherwise, stay at home and kill yourself. Just, the governor of New York doesn't give a damn. That would ruin a Republican if he'd said it. Ruin a Republican if he'd said it. But he's a Democrat. It'll make him. That is all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening, tuning in, telling a friend, and doing all that sort of stuff. On tomorrow's show, I don't even know what I'm going to do, if I'm going to have another guest or what. The Friday is usually the interview edition of the show. I'm working on somebody, but I already did the video interview, so it probably won't even be a video interview. I don't know. I'm making it up as I go along. You can come along for the ride every day. You can also help out. Patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. Just email me, Derek at Daily Caller, blah, 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 yakety schmackety, and all that good stuff. Thank you for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.
So he was the one wasting time. I say that because I keep hearing him say, we delayed. No, he delayed. But here we are, and we're ready to go on to the next build.